the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. School your coworkers around the water cooler. Your brain drinks here. You're listening to Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Garden's game has improved dramatically in the last, 10 days to 2 weeks. He's kind of shown a lot of the speed, puck carrying ability, power play ability that he showed last year, and he was able to sustain it for, three, four, five games in a row.
Dave Nonis, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jay Gardner of the Toronto Maple Leafs, will cut his way into the lineup tonight for the Maple Leafs against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We've got Bruins Maple Leafs tickets to give away for Saturday. Hopefully Gardner, does all the right things tonight and doesn't find his way back in the AHL by Saturday. One-game tryout.
Don't think the collective hearts of the Leafs Nation could take that, Greg. Don't even suggest such a thing.
Well, the Leafs, as you call it, the Leafs Nation's rarely united about anything, in all honesty. We're getting a lot of Grabowski. There's pro-Grabowski, anti-Grabowski. There's pro-Carlisle. There's people who like math.
No.
Honestly, there's a lot of people split on a lot of things with the Leafs. Reimer and Scrivens.
But not Jake Gardner. I don't know any member of the Leafs Nation who's not united.
Well, they want to see him play. I think I would say they were split on how good he can be, will be. And that's the thing. This is a 22-and-a-half-year-old man. I was going to say this earlier. This would be a totally different story if all of a sudden Morgan Rielly, let's say Jake Gardner didn't exist and Morgan Rielly was the call-up, and Morgan Rielly was going to go into the lineup tonight, we'd go, oh, no. 18 years old, let him get some AHL games. He can play against men, but let him do it down there on the farm with the Marlies. But we're talking about a guy who's 4.5 years older than Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardner.
And the college experience does matter. And those extra years do make a big difference, I think, in a young man, especially young athlete's development.
And how good he was last year didn't matter. I mean, Kiprios has been banging this drum, and he's so right about it. There's no comparison between Kadri and calling him up for a couple games at a time, letting him spin around for 9 minutes, makes a couple turnovers. Brian Burke's irritated. Ron Wilson's irritated. No difference between that and maybe on many a night last year in the 75 games he played, your best defenseman. We're all like on the ground worshiping when Kadri is the best forward for the Maple Leafs, which has happened a couple times this year. Hopefully happens again soon.
Which is why I think it's vital for the Leafs and Carlisle especially to understand what you just said, Greg, about where Gardner's at in his development and what he can bring, and give him the amount of games he needs, not make a rash decision after a couple of games and go, that's it. Back he goes.
Well, because I don't think you're going to wreck him. I'm just not a subscriber to, if you do A, B, or C to player X, A will ruin him, B will make him great, C will, might, but it might not. I just think, would any extra time in the American Hockey League have made Luke Shen skate better? Would any extra time in the American Hockey League have made Luke Shen an offensive force they could be comfortable with on the first power play unit? The answer is no and no.
Is he a number one defenseman with the Flyers?
No. No, but that's not the hypothetical. Is more, had they not brought him up at age 18? And because we grew up and watched Gary Nylund and Jim Bennings and Luke Richardson's and Drake Barahowski's all roll through the Maple Leafs, we'd say, can't have 18, 19-year-old defenseman in the lineup. Sure you can. Sure you can if they're good.
Well, we've seen it. Have we not seen examples of what it is? If you can be a young defenseman at a young age and play, they will put you out there. And young players, I think the paradigm in the NHL and the attitudes of young talent coming into the league as rookies, if they feel they have the physical size to protect themselves and play, then they throw them out there and play them the significant minutes.
I mean, Mike, you saw in the OHL a couple extra years almost, or at least an extra season for Alex Pietrangelo. And he gets sent back at 18's fourth overall pick. He had the offensive game that Shen never had from the same draft class. And people are going, oh, no. Oh, what are the Blues doing? He's in junior. Now he's in Peoria. Now he's in Barrie, right, for a 19-year-old season after playing in Niagara. Guy could win the Norris Trophy someday. Guy might be on the Sochi Olympic team next year. No negative curve in his development whatsoever.
You read my mind. That is exactly the name I was thinking of as Jim was talking about this. And he was kind of stuck, Pietrangelo, in that awkward spot where you're too good for junior, but you're not quite ready for that step. But you're so bang on. A guy with that skill set, and I don't know that Gardner's going to be a Pietrangelo type, but still, when you've got it, you've got it. And it doesn't matter where you play, your development, you'll continue to accelerate your own skills. The important thing for Pietrangelo at the time was to get playing with players that were more skilled because he was too good for junior and just not quite there for the NHL yet.
And Gardner comes across as a young man who's very comfortable in his own skin and confident in his abilities. I don't pretend to know him personally, but he does have that image of a guy who won't get rattled by the moment, who enjoys the pressure, enjoys playing hockey, knows he has certain abilities that other defensemen does not have. And one thing Nick had talked about, and you mentioned about Kiprios banging the drum for Gardner, Greg, is his ability to skate the puck out of his own end because he can skate and stick handle like a few defensemen the Leafs have.
Now, we'll play Name That Leaf. Leafs, Bruins tickets coming up in a little bit. Scott Moyer will join us at 7:40. Olympic champion ice dancer, of course. He and Tessa Virtue got the silver at the Worlds just this past. They have a huge team event coming up in a few weeks' time. So that's coming up. Now, let me run this Ovechkin-Crosby thing by you. I saw a blog yesterday on WashingtonTimes.com asking the question, and maybe because the Caps were playing the Penguins last night, Pittsburgh won the game, is Alex Ovechkin the A-Rod of the NHL? And I'm going, holy cow. All right, we're really through the looking glass now with Alexander Ovechkin. $9 million contract, it's going to be $10 million cash, I think, starting next year for another 7 years. It's not too many GMs who would want that deal. But what I find a bit disingenuous is the idea, and Pittsburgh media drum this up a lot. They're among the most pro-your team that there is. Boston's like that. Ottawa's like that. The idea that there was never a debate about who's the better player, who you'd rather have, who has a more well-rounded game, what does Crosby do better, what does Ovechkin do better. We had that great playoff series in 2009 between the two teams. It went 7 games, and Pittsburgh won game 7 handily. But Ovechkin outpointed Crosby in that particular series. I think it's a little dishonest to suggest that there was never any question and that people were, you know, falling in love with Ovechkin and it wasn't real. I think it was a very fair debate to have for 2 or 3 years maybe that you might rather have Alex Ovechkin on your hockey team. Am I wrong?
Oh, Greg, I think someone's being completely dishonest to say there was no debate. In 07 and 08 and then 08-09, Ovechkin scored 121 goals and had over 200 points in 2 seasons. At the same time, Crosby had 84 goals, 175 points. That's a debatable talking point that Ovechkin in 2 years scored more goals and had more points than Crosby and was dominant physically. So there were a lot of players who were weighing the different merits of both superstar players and which one would you rather have.
And I think the debate was sparked over the slight differences. They were slight at the time. Crosby, for example, I would always argue is the more complete player. Whereas Ovechkin, when this debate was going on, was the more dynamic or flashy player. The goals he scored were not the kinds of goals that Sidney Crosby was going to score. The way, just with the simple skill, with that hunger for the puck, Crosby's a great hockey player, far more complete.
More instinctual, almost.
Do we remember a Crosby goal that's like Ovechkin sliding on the ice and putting it in behind his neck?
No.
With the backhand of the stick. We don't. And Ovechkin, I'd watch them both play in person, and that's the best parameter. I'm lucky enough that I could do that. And Ovechkin hits people like, you remember how he would just hit people like crazy? He'd go out and have 5 hits in a shift, and he'd still have the puck for half the shift, and you'd say, how does he do that? Because you're not supposed to hit guys. You're not supposed to be able to control and dictate the play and hit guys pretty frequently. Now Crosby doesn't go out of his way to hit people, and he shouldn't. We had Don Cherry on last week, and he said just that. The reason Crosby's elevated his game up again is because he's staying away from silly business. He's not running guys, and he was doing that when he came back from his concussion.
And now we have a Sidney Crosby with 50 points in the year, prorated over a full season. It's like 130 points, and Ovechkin's gone down where Crosby's bounced back from the injury. But there certainly was a huge debate, I feel, at that time, about 5 years ago, Greg, because of the dynamic nature of the way Ovechkin played the game.
See, I said to somebody last week, and none of this is a dig at Crosby. None of it is. And I don't find I know you were complaining about him whining, and I don't even think he does that anymore like he used to 2-3 years ago. And he's admitted that he did it. Tortorella called him out for last year, and Crosby basically said, I was probably doing too much of that my first couple years. But what I was going to say was, I think with Crosby, I still look and I see a player that you know, may even be improving. The argument always was about the supporting cast, too. What if Alex Ovechkin had gotten to play with Evgeny Malkin? never mind playing with him at times, but having somebody else think, who are we going to use our best checking players against? The Crosby line or the Malkin line? Ovechkin's never had that. And he's almost exclusively played. He's played a ton with Nick Backstrom until a lot of the coaching changes, and Dale Hunter last year and obviously Adam Oates this year got criticized for not having Ovechkin playing with similar skilled players. But Crosby's always had the better skilled players, and that's not his fault. That's just the facts.
And think about Letang, where his game is at, and how Mike Greenstock has fallen. You have a defenseman like Letang feeding you. It makes a player like Crosby's life a lot easier, where Green is just lost.
Jordan Staal is a third center, and Washington's sending out Jeff Halpern. I mean,
all you could do is laugh.
It's not a knock, but it's far from a knock on these guys. There's so much about Ovechkin. We're now to the point where we just say we'll never see that Ovechkin again. It'd be an absolute shock. It's not even, hey, it might happen. It'd be shocking if we had a guy come back and all of a sudden go 50-40 and be what he was. I don't know if he's burned out. I don't know if he needs a change of scenery, but it's just as hard for Washington to trade him as it would be for another GM to take that contract.
Well, and Danny Woodbridge sends a text in at 590-590 saying number 8 needs a change of scenery. He would do well again somewhere else. And there are some people that feel that maybe his time in Washington's done. Who could take the deal? Who could take the cap?
There's well,
story.
And then there's scoring 65 goals and 112 points. That player's probably gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Burnout's the only thing that comes to mind for me. Because he was so dominant, like you talked about. Where's that? If he could dominate the shifts the way he could.
And you watch him and you think, God, how old is he? 32? He's 27.
Man.
He's 27 years old.
He should still be running guys over.
Yeah, exactly. Seems like a waste.
Name that Leaf. Tickets could be yours for the Leafs and Bruins Saturday night. 3 clues. Name that Leaf. Right. Played with the Red Wings and the Sabres prior to the Maple Leafs. Yeah, that really narrows it down. But he is currently an AHL assistant coach, and he has had or is having currently, could be either, at least one relative playing in the National Hockey League.
I know it.
Okay. One relative in the NHL, currently an AHL assistant coach, and he played with the Red Wings and the Sabres before the Maple Leafs. This is a bit of a knockout of the park, bit of a groove fastball. Name that Leaf, 416-870-0590, *590. Coming up, Doug McLean. Why is he hating on Grabowski?
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
722, got a winner, right? We did? Yeah?
Mark and Aurelia.
Mark and Aurelia knew that
Mike Foligno, I think you should be grateful.
Yeah!
Was that Leaf. Previous lifetime with the Sabres and the Red Wings. Currently an AHL assistant coach with the Hershey Bears. And a relative in the NHL. He's got two. Marcus in Buffalo. And obviously Nick Foligno, now a Columbus Blue Jacket.
With the red hot Columbus Blue Jackets, I might add, too.
Settle down. They're not going anywhere.
They have points 11 straight games.
They're not making it, honestly. The last thing the Jackets want is to squeeze into that. Well, maybe they do. Couple extra home dates.
You should have seen the Blue Jackets media in Columbus flip to that game for a minute last night. They were going crazy.
By the way, that's all CGI. That's like,
oh,
yeah.
There's no one really,
it's like,
there.
It's, yeah, it's Pixar. It's what they green use in screen. Like Toy Story 3. Now, really, just quick, I think here's the other Crosby Ovechkin thing. What was kind of unfair as well, Ovechkin's a player 2 years older, and this may have helped him tremendously. He was playing with men at 16 with Moscow Dynamo. Remember Alexander Cimak? It's a line mate of Ovechkin's. C-Mac's 36, Ovechkin's 16. So that's like when your kid comes out and plays with the dad at the, gets on the ice after an NHL practice. Crosby with Rimouski, though they went to the Memorial Cup, you can't name me another NHL player that's on that team. And they gave Pouliot a go. Edmonton did for a little while. Marc-Antoine Pouliot. There's no, it's not like even in London where you had Boland and Fritchie was supposed to be really good. Girardi and even Brian Rodney, people thought were going to play. That team was full of Brandon Prust, full of future NHL players. Crosby didn't have that until he got to Pittsburgh. He really didn't.
Was there a guy named Danny Sabourin who played in Rimouski that year? I'm trying to remember. I just remember he had some line mates. I can't remember the name of the guys.
Danny Rusin.
That's it, Danny Rusin. Who put
was playing in that Quebec league that George Laroque causes trouble in every year.
That's where he's descended to? Oh,
so.
No.
Yeah. 2 weeks from today, trade deadline coverage, the best in the biz. At 8 a.m. it begins on Sportsnet. We'll cover it, of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Our Sportsnet 590 Hockey Insider will be front and center for that. For Cicely on this morning, we are family-driven. We welcome him in. Doug McLean. I heard a very entertaining interview yesterday with Corey Perry and Andrew Cogliano. And you told a great story about your scouts and Corey Perry. But, Doug, there were a lot of people in that draft that thought Perry's involved in antics, flops a lot, gets involved in a lot of stuff, uses his stick, and they weren't quite sure his act would play in the NHL. So that's not unusual. That was not unusual back then, was it?
No, and what did he go, 22nd in that draft?
28th.
28th in that draft.
And I mean, yeah.
Praying he might slip to the second round. I mean, hard to believe, isn't it, when you think about a Hart Trophy winner now and $8.6 million. So good on Corey. You know, he was a good player in London. By the way, Mark Methot was on that London.
That's right.
Team.
Yeah, another pro.
And
he
went shift for shift against Crosby in that Memorial Cup.
Were you at the final? I was at the final game. Like, honestly, Rimouski never came close to scoring, did they? Not once.
No.
Not once.
No.
They could have played 120 minutes. They weren't scoring.
Yeah, exactly.
Doug, you made a point.
Great job on Crosby in that series.
You made a point yesterday about the role of Bruce Boudreau has played in Anaheim and the reason that Getzlaff and Perry have agreed to these long-term extensions. Why is it working so well at the Ducks for Boudreau, where it just never really worked that well in Washington?
Well, it did work in Washington in the regular season. I mean, they had tremendous runs in the regular season. I mean, they were one of the better teams in the NHL. But in the playoffs, I mean, I guess you think about that Montreal series all the time, where Halak stood in his head in that series and Montreal, you know, knocked him out. And all of a sudden, everybody thought Bruce Boudreau was dumb, couldn't adapt, couldn't coach in the playoffs. And there was a major change of philosophy with the Washington Capitals. And they decided they better revamp their team so they were playoff ready. And they've been no good ever since. It's amazing how it's gone the opposite way. And, you know, Bruce's reputation was really hurt in that series. A lot of people said he was out-coached. And then you watch back and you think about that series. And as Bruce said after the series was over, you know, all we did is out-chance them 5-1. Halak stood in his head. And we're no good. And it caused a major philosophy change in Washington, and they haven't recovered from it.
They had a really bad call in that Game 7 as well, like goalie interference with Mike Knuble in front of the net. It probably should have been a 1-1 game headed to the last couple of minutes. That said, Doug, you look at Anaheim. They might hang into that 2 seed, maybe won't catch Chicago. No one's going to catch them. There's matchups that you'd worry about, and that's the Western Conference, isn't it? Vancouver, L.A., San Jose, there's a lot of pitfalls for Anaheim. They're far from a guaranteed team to advance out of the first round. No one was last year, as we learned.
Well, you know what's going to happen. You're going to get into the playoffs in the first round, and automatically the biggest assignment in that playoff round against Anaheim is who's going to shut down the Getzlaff-Perry combination. And we see it in playoff time all the time. Teams can be successful doing that. You know, you may use 2 lines against them. You're going to have the best defense pair go head-to-head with them, and their focus is going to be strictly shutting down that duo. And lots of times in the playoffs, you can do that. You can have success doing that if that's what the main focus of your checkers are. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, Anaheim, where it ends for them. But hey, they're having a heck of a year, and Boudreau makes it fun. I got to give him a ton of credit. I really do. He's done a great job there, and Bob Murray stepped to the plate and got Corey signed. And people saying, well, they're going to trade him. I'm thinking, no, Corey Perry's not going to be traded. They're going to keep him for the playoff run, and they're going to do everything in their power to get him signed. And if they lost him, they lost him for nothing, which would have been devastating. You cannot lose those type of players as a franchise. You simply can't.
Doug, a lot of Leafs fans are excited tonight about the possibility and what they're going to expect from Jake Gardiner back in the lineup. What are you expecting from him tonight?
I expect he'll come back to where he was last year, I would think. It may take him a few games, but I think he'll fit in well. The challenging part for Carlisle is, you know, what are the defense pairings going to be? You can't play him with Dion because Dion has to go against the best lineup, he's been using Dion against the other team's best players night in and night out. So I don't think you can play him with Dion in that matchup situation. So it'll be interesting to see who he pairs with Dion. Does Gunnarsson go back with Dion, who they were decent together a lot of nights last year? Who does he play with? You can't play him with Lyles. Where does he end up with? Franson, Frazier? It'll be interesting to see the combinations.
Doug McClain, our guest, Hockey Central at noon later today. Don't forget, they're on Sportsnet tomorrow night with the Leafs and Sabres. We've got that game right here from Buffalo on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Listening to the show, I feel like you're down on Grabowski. I don't mean unfairly down, but you're not impressed with some of the things he's doing, and you're probably in alignment with Randy Carlyle. What are you not liking about a player that that looked like maybe the best player the Leafs had two seasons ago?
Well, you know, the line just hasn't clicked all year. I mean, they've been in and out, but, you know, the odd game, you get a good performance out of him, but he very, very seldom has his line been able to contribute, you know, and for whatever reason, you automatically are down on a guy that's making $5.5 million, and he's a third-line center. I guess he plays in the second hole pretty well all the time, but really he's a third-line guy. So that's not his fault, you know, that he gets $5.5 million for 5 years or whatever it is. You know, Kadri's blown by him. That's the bottom line. And I think he's a guy that you probably can move. And what does he bring back? There's a ton of teams. Here's the problem. If you trade Grabowski and you don't get Bozak signed, you got Kadri as your centerman next year, and that's it. Got to be careful there. So if you're going to trade Grabowski, you got to get Bozak signed. And
would you keep Bozak? I mean, would you go into next year with him as a number one center?
I wouldn't trade him. I would go through the rest of the season with him because you need him to try to get into the playoffs because there's no centerman out there. There's Roy's out there,
Ribeiro.
Ribeiro's out there, but very few centermen are available. So yeah. What do? You got to keep Bozak and you try to get him signed. And Bozak's agent sitting there saying, well, just a minute, you're paying Grabowski $5.5 million. What are you going to pay me? And you're thinking, oh my God, you can't pay Bozak $5.5 million. That's for sure.
No.
So where does that end up? So I just think Bozak or Grabowski is a guy they've got to consider moving, but you know, they got to be careful.
And quickly, Doug, what do you expect from the when they bring up the idea of the coaches challenge at the GM meetings today?
I think it'll be a couple year process. You know, I think it'll eventually come to fruition. I think it'll happen. It'll, as with the NHL, they always, well, let's put it in the American League for a year and see how it works in the American League. We saw how the hybrid icing, what did we talk about? Hybrid icing, yeah, for 3 years, put it in the American League and they gas it at Christmas. You know, so they'll go through the regular routine. It'll take a little while. I don't care one way or the other. I'm sick of bad calls. I mean, it could have cost the Ottawa Senators last night dearly. Two desperate calls against the Sens last night. They ended up recovering and coming back and winning that game in the third. But, you know, but you can't have it on every penalty. You can't have it. I mean, what is it going to be covered on? I mean, you're going to have offsides covered. You're going to have goalie interference. You're going to have people in the crease. I mean,
I think it's just offsides and ices. Doug, I don't know if you can have it on any penalty, right? I mean, it's all judgment calls, unless you're looking to see if a high stick clips somebody. That's about all you could do, though. I don't know how you would do it.
Simply, you can't have a penalty reviewed. You just simply can't. It's because the referees, they're paranoid enough now, you know, about main calls. I mean, that high sticking call last night in the Ottawa game in the second period was just an unbelievable call against Ottawa and could have, they were down 3-1. And they could have lost the game, you know. But anyway, it'll be interesting. But I guess I would like to see it in some instance, but not too many.
Doug, thanks for this. We'll be listening at noon.
Take care, guys.
Doug McClain joining us on Brady and Lang. I don't totally agree on Grabowski. I know his ticket is a high ticket. Even strength points. I should just read out the points, but I don't have time to tell you. Phil Kessel has 17 even strength points. Tyler Bozak has 12 even strength points. Grabowski has 9 even strength points. Kuhlman has 14 even strength points. He has no points on the power play. Kuhlman and Grabowski are almost matching Kessel and Bozak's production even strength with about 10 minutes less a game and no power play time. None. Zero power play. Very limited power play time. Two combined power play points for Grabowski and Kuhlman. And what I say, 15 for Bozak and Kessel. It's just, he's totally being misused, Grabowski is.
And Greg, for a team trying to snap out of this funk and get some positive momentum, knowing that you have a couple games coming up against the Bruins, what do you have to lose by having Grabowski get some power play time? What, an extra goal or two? Maybe a win?
But then who do you take off? You've got Lupo back now. I didn't like not seeing James Van Riemsdyk. He didn't play at all in the overtime. That's one of your best players. 4-on-4, you got 5 minutes of 4-on-4. Didn't play him.
And he can finish. We know JVR can finish.
And now it lost in the Jake Gardner coming back tonight is the idea that, Colton Orr is going to be twirling around on Grabowski's line. How's that help Miguel Grabowski? Who's he move the puck to?
What?
Or?
Oh, he's going to have all this room, Greg.
So, yeah,
he's going to have 8 feet of space around him.
He's going to be fearless a little later on tonight. Coming up, Grape Line, Don Cherry on Lindy Ruff getting fired and Darcy Regier still being in Buffalo. The pride of Ilderton. It's not me. Scott Moyer next, Olympic champion ice dancer. And Philadelphia wants in on this cold weather Super Bowl thing. Say no to that, please.
Now, more Grady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back, Brady and Lang. Greg Brady, Jim Lang, Mike Farwell. A reminder, the Raptors season is still going on. Yes. Yes, you
no,
kind of
kidding.
Forgot
Greg,
about it for
no.
a couple days, didn't
are
you?
Are you kidding me?
They're playing the Bobcats tonight.
Yes.
On TV, on TV and radio? Good gracious. Raptors, Bobcats tonight.
It's true.
Are you guys liking that one?
Oh, you got to love the Raptors. You don't even have to think about that. Stop it.
Can we all tie in the NBA?
He always thinks before he speaks.
I try.
Wayne Gretzky coming up at 8 o'clock. We're excited about that. Yeah, exactly. From one legend. Who does he like in that game? From one legend to another, our next guest is a two-time world champion ice dance gold medalist, of course, a huge hero and heroine, along with his partner Tessa Virtue at the Vancouver 2010 Olympics. This past weekend in London, Ontario, close enough to Ilderton, you could throw a stone. It might bounce a couple times. He and Tessa won silver in the ice dance competition. We've got another team competition coming up, and obviously the target is set for Sochi, Russia next February. We're very pleased to welcome an Olympic gold medalist, Scott Moyer, back to Brady and Lang. Scott, it's great to have you on again. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks a lot, fellas. I'm doing well. I appreciate being on the show. It's always a big pleasure for me as a listener.
Well, we got to do it. We got to do tons more. Now, a little bit of downtime after the Worlds. Tell us a little bit of, not much though. We'll explain that in a sec. What was the London atmosphere like? Had to be a dream come true. I know you guys feel like you fell a little short, but honestly, it's 1 and 1A. This American pair has tried to match you step for step and score for score a lot. More often than not, you've come out on top. How was the weekend for you in retrospect?
Well, it was a very special weekend for Tess and I. I mean, we are pretty lucky kids. We talked about this before we went in, to have a home games when we were 22 and 20 years old, and now to have a hometown world is virtually unheard of in our sport, but... yeah, the energy in the building was really electric. The community and the country came out and supported all Canadian athletes and, you know, all skaters from all over the world. It was pretty amazing and definitely memories that we won't forget for the rest of our career, that's for sure.
Scott, as a team at your level, you and Tessa, does it fuel you guys even more to know you're going to have such talented rivals like the American team of Merrill and Charlie going into Sochi?
Well, yeah, that is a big... It definitely does help. I don't think there'll be any problem with motivation this spring and summer, knowing that we're kind of fell a little bit short this year, and we definitely want to make sure that doesn't happen next year. So that's really motivating. We also train with them too, so we see them every day, and you know, we're going to be reminded every day of how they took our World Championships in London, and we want to make sure that we get ours in Russia.
Scott Moyer, our guest, of course. Now, the Worlds are very popular, the Olympics incredibly more. So the Olympics will be a bit different next year. Explain the concept of the team trophy, which is going to have you guys skating more often and actually making the Olympics a bit longer. But that may end up being a good thing because you get the team contest out of the way, and then it's all for the gold for you for the ice dance itself.
Well, I think for our countries, it's particularly exciting. But for skating next year, there's two chances for figure skaters to come home with Olympic medals, and it's also you can win your single event, and you can also compete. You have to skate the free and the long twice, but it's another shot for an Olympic medal. I can guarantee you that no Canadian is complaining about that. So. Having Patrick Chan, having Megan DeHamel and Eric Radford in third place, and having Tessa Knight in second this year, we're looking like we're going to be up there to contend in that event. So it is very exciting.
But these are heady times, Scott, for Skate Canada to have so many talented figure skaters in this country qualifying for the Olympics. Why has it been so successful, the program, and yourself and Tessa and so many other teammates have made it that next step?
Yeah, it is a... it is a very young Canadian team, and well, the whole sport is a lot younger, but I think we have to really credit our high performance director and Michael Slipchuk, and also you know, the development at Skate Canada. I think they've done a great job in bringing up some young kids, and I think we just have some really good talent. I mean, it is kind of the luck of the draw in some ways, but I think Canada's done a great job in bringing up people like Caitlin Osmond, and her getting a push at 17 years old to be at a World Championships, and she proved this week why she should be there, and you know, that makes it even more exciting. And as a member of Team Canada, it's a very exciting time, and I think for this team event, it's pretty exciting as well, because we're kind of coming in under the radar. I mean, I know that the Americans did an interview not too long ago and didn't even name us as one of the contenders for World Team Trophy. So it's nice to kind of have that as a reminder, and we'll kind of be looking to come in as a surprise.
See, that just enrages Jim, but I lived in the States for 9 years, so I understand that. They've got to be cocky, right? They're the leader of the free world. They got to be a bit cocky. That's how it works.
No, Scott. The Canadians are going to win the medal.
We're on the radar. That's for sure. I mean, we are going to the Olympics with the biggest team out of any country. So we have to be proud, and I think people will be taking notice of that.
Scott Moyer, our guest, kind enough to join us on Brady Lang. You're so immersed in what you need to do at a competition. I don't know how much you get a chance to see or get a vibe of what Patrick Chan did accomplish. And we were saying on Friday, if he pulls this off, wins the world's, I don't know how many times, and you follow all the sports, how many times we've had anybody outside of hockey players win the world championship at anything individually three straight years. It hasn't happened. Do you marvel at it? You talk about the team depth and being able to combine forces with him in Sochi next year in a brand new competition. It's got to be incredibly exciting.
Well, yeah, the thing with Patrick Chan is I've grown up with Patrick, so we've competed against or with each other internationally for many, many years since he was about 13 years old. And I always try and get into the venue when Patrick skates, because he does create really magical moments. So I was in the venue the night of the short, and I watched the night of the long on TV, but there was a real sense. And I mean, having him anchor our team next year at the World Team Trophy is a huge bonus, because I mean, not only does that not happen for Canadians to win 3 years in a row world competition, it's so hard, but that's unheard of in our sport. And I mean, Patrick has just made it happen year after year, and he's got a lot of momentum. And I'm not going to sit here and jinx him or anything, but, you know, I really like his chances for next year, and obviously that helps our World Team Trophy chances as well.
Be honest, though. Who's a faster skater? Who could do suicides faster, like blue line to red line to blue line? You were Patrick.
Right?
Yeah. You could, right?
Are we in hockey skates? If we're in hockey skates.
You got him beat? Okay.
In hockey skates, but if we're in figure skates, that kid, I don't even know where he gets his speed from. It seems like he takes one push and he's across the ice, so it'd be pretty nerve-wracking.
But from a personal standpoint for you, Scott, knowing what's at stake for you and Tessa in the next 12 months, how much downtime do you actually give yourself before you get right back into it physically, mentally, preparing for the Olympics?
Well, you do have to take a little bit of downtime, and right now, we're going to kind of take this week off and regroup. But you know, Tessa and I are not doing World Team Trophy, which is in April. We have our very capable and good second dance team that's going. So we're going to try and get an early start next year before we go on Stars on Ice tour. And we have to take our downtime, but at the same time, as you said, we're kind of chomping at the bits here. We want to get at it again, and it is motivating to know. You know, that we didn't get the results that we wanted last week, and you kind of want to get back at it. But we're smarter than that. It's a long year. We need to take our rest, and we're going to be a lot more productive if we're a rested team.
Scott Moyer, our guest. Now, before you go, a source told me there was a lot of world media there. You're used to this. You know, it's a global event. You were trying to push some of the media out to go have like dinner in Ilderton. Now, this is like back to when Marty McFly goes back to the future. There aren't any restaurants in Ilderton. I'm older than you, but where would you go?
Unbelievable. We have two restaurants.
Okay.
Philadelphia, which you'd have to get out there for breakfast, because it only does breakfast and lunch, and we have the King Edward's, just a pub, and you know, you can always find a beer in Ilderton, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, but that was like in the parking lot at Oxbow after like a grade eight. I shouldn't even say. Try and behave
Scott,
ourselves.
You,
no,
right?
Not Scott. Yeah, exactly. It was the '80s. Everybody was experimenting. Hey, thanks so much for this.
I'll have to take your word for that.
You have to. Yes. Thanks so much for this. Fantastic work on the weekend, and we hope we can keep in a great. We'd love to get you and Tessa in here for a chit chat long before you go to Russia. So hopefully we can pull that off.
That'd be great. Yeah, you have to get the pretty and intelligent one on every once in a while.
That's what Jim says. Thanks so much for this. We appreciate it, Scott.
Thank you, fellas.
Scott Moyer joining us, Olympic champion, ice dancer, right there. Good guy in the room. I know I don't usually play the good guy in the room card, but he is.
I did like the question about who he could win a race with, him and Patrick Chan, but he said, yeah, hockey skates, yes, figure skates, not a chance.
Yeah. I think he could pull it off. Now, there's apparently also Ilderton's a little hamlet outside of London. There's two hairdressers now. There was only one place to go get your haircut when I grew up. So it's heavy competition. It's like the sports radio wars. It's just a big competition of two hairdressers now.
Did it have like
two salons?
The old magazines with like the blue jar with the comb and all that.
But now that I know this, I mean, honestly, you can take your cat and get the vet to look at him, and you can get a mani-pedi in the same day in Ilderton. This is fantastic news. Now, really, we promised it about a minute. Philadelphia, the owner of the Eagles, Jeffrey Lurie, not to be confused with Jeffrey Loria, angling for a Super Bowl. Super Bowl is in New York next year. Stop the insanity, right? This is not what we want. You got and Farwell, you
and I
go at this cold weather business all the time. Yeah, you don't like baseball
exactly.
In cold weather.
Thank you.
But it's okay if it's minus 20 and the ball is like a frozen brick.
And yet you'll
in an NFL playoff game. I can't
figure
you out.
You'll love your games on the frozen tundra season long. And then in the
but
Super Bowl, you want a neutral site, warm weather.
Okay, so the Super Bowl 2013 ticket prices are going to stay around $1,200. So you're going to ask a guy.
And you got to buy a coat. You got to buy a Canada Goose coat.
Right, with the Super Bowl logo, which will set you back about $750. So you're dropping $2,000 a person to sit outside. It's kind of a quaint idea. But if all of a sudden we're rotating Super Bowl sites to Philadelphia, Cleveland, Chicago, that's a
Pittsburgh.
Tough
spot. Oy.
This just in. That's where you play football, and the Super Bowl
is
in February. No, not until
the
Super Bowl. The
Super Bowl from the mid-60s on has always been Dome, Florida, Arizona.
I know it has been. That doesn't make it right.
But you have to have your elite of society be comfortable. They don't hold the Academy Awards outside in Iowa in February, okay? It's not in a cornfield.
I mean,
they hold it at a lovely pavilion where it's 70 degrees, and the women can show off their shoulders.
As someone said in a Philadelphia article today, it's about the same weather in Philly as it is here today.
Yeah.
So the thought they're going to have a Super Bowl in this kind of weather doesn't exactly
crazy.
Have a lot of appeal.
Great idea.
Now, super quick, let's do this surfing story really fast. Wayne Gretzky's coming up top of the hour. This scene was featured in Teen Wolf, where he turns into the wolf and he rides along the van. You're not really supposed to keep doing this. Teen Wolf was a lesson in what not to ape, if you will, out of the movies. David Chandler, 37, of Alcoa. Alcoa, I know. Alcoa can't wait. I got it. In Tennessee, died from injuries he suffered in a Sunday night stunt. He was standing on top of a moving Toyota Sienna van as it traveled along a road at 9:30. The van rounded a curve, and shocker of all shockers, the victim fell off the van's roof, slid nearly 30 feet along the pavement, and then he came to rest, and now he is also... He's come to rest.
Was there
literally
alcohol involved for both parties? Because why would a 37-year-old man be on the roof of a minivan going around a corner?
That seems like you get that out of your... You get those jollies out of your system around 17 and a half,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Everything stupid you do, you know, you're doing... you're popping wheelies on the in the school ground with on frozen ice. I did weird things. Never mind.
Does your dad know about this?
No.
He does now.
No. You shouldn't have Labatt 50s at an elementary school dance. I just want to say.
But it tastes so good when it hits your mouth.
But the music was so bad. I had to get through it. It was a bad era. Wham was huge that year. 7:55. Wayne Gretzky is next on Brady and Lang.